For the last 4 years, at the end of the holy month of Ramadan, the Muslim communities of Anaheim have come together for a big neighborhood festival and party. The holiday is called Eid al-Fitr. It's the end of a month of fasting, and it's a big deal. But this celebration that I'm talking about isn't just a celebration within the Muslim community or something traditional. It's a big citywide block party kind of thing that you might see anywhere else, with vendors selling all kinds of food and a big stage playing pop music and having dancers. And it's the idea is to both be a celebration for the Muslim community and then also to help the non-Muslim community understand a little bit about their Muslim neighbors. It's also co-sponsored by, among others, the city of Anaheim and Disneyland. That gives you sort of the idea of what it's like. Last July, the festival was interrupted by Islamophobic protesters who held large signs promoting their particular version of Christianity, yelled stereotypes and insults, and made provocative and derogatory statements about the Prophet Muhammad. There's a video of this that I was going to show, and I elected not to because you can still hear them, and it's just so offensive. So as this was going down, one of the people there was named Ibrahim Dalati, and he is an 18-year-old. He's a Muslim. He's an American. He was a festival staffer, and he's actually the son of the person who organizes the Eid festival every year. He was trying to figure out something to do. In an effort to drown out the protesters, the main stage, where there wasn't anything going on, turned on pop music really loud. And Ibrahim Dalati just started dancing a little bit, just as a way, he said later, just as a way to show that I'm minding my own business. You know, I'm kind of ignoring you. And he wasn't exactly trying to start a dance party, but that is what happened. Pretty soon, a couple other staffers joined in, and then so did random other people at the festival. And on the video, it goes from disturbingly easy to make out the protesters' words and to only pay attention to them, to really hard to hear what they're saying and hard to pay attention to them. And Dalati later said this, "I believe music is a great way to bring people together. We are going to keep on enjoying the festival and spreading the love and the peace and showing them who we are. Hard times require furious dancing." In December of 2014, the dance community of Philadelphia took to the streets. This was a project called Dancing for Justice, which organized in Philadelphia, New York, DC, Detroit, Chicago, and Tallahassee. And to quote from their mission, "Dancing for Justice uses art as a primary tool to communicate and protest for Black lives." I read an article about this from two of the main participants who are pretty major figures in the dance scene, the professional dance community. Ellen Chenoweth talked about it later, and she said, "To say we marched is not accurate. We traveled as much as possible in a sequence of steps, 8 counts with our hands up, 8 counts holding parts of the body as if wounded, 8 counts hunched over with our hands behind our backs, and the final 8 counts bringing our hands to our chests." And this is a dance working on several levels, right? It was to spread a message to an audience, enacting scenes from violence against Black people, the community experience of violence and grief. It was also a vehicle of justice for the participants, for expressing grief and rage and fear. Dance as ritual, as a funeral, and also on some psychological and physiological level, using embodiment to address and move through negative emotions. When they reached the end point of the march, they formed 3 concentric circles, which is a symbol of strength. And then there was a time for free dancing, for participants to shed the fear and the brokenness and the violence. Her colleague, Gregory King, put it this way, "Dance entertains, but dance also mirrors the imbalances in society. Politics danced as we organized our bodies to encircle freedom. Freedom danced as we worked to change the landscape of hate. Moving within a movement, our choreographed bodies broke through the restrictions of tyranny as we boldly cried out for justice. The power of the moving body can also serve as a vehicle for social change, change that uses differences to highlight commonality. We danced for justice. We danced for equality. We danced for our ancestors and our children. Hard times require furious dancing. Last July, I attended the Gala Festival of Choruses, which is a giant choral festival in Denver, attended by, Steve was there, attended by member choruses who are gay choruses, lesbian choruses, LGBT choruses from all over North America and actually all over the world. Those of you who read my newsletter column will have heard the following story. So you get a prize. And there were so many touching and inspiring moments in this this festival. There was watching, this was not long after the Pulse shooting in Orlando. And at the opening concert, as the Orlando Gay Chorus walked in, they weren't participating in the opening concert. They were just walking in wearing their t-shirts to sit and listen to the concert. And they received a prolonged and standing ovation as they walked in. Another significant experience for me was attending the concert featuring LGBTQ youth choruses. It was so beautiful to see teenagers and young adults, I think they was up to age 25, living bravely into their authentic selves, and whether that is gay or queer or trans or as allies to people in those communities. And this concert ended with all of those youth choruses performing a mashup of songs. Do you guys know what a mashup is? It's like where there's two different songs, and it's not exactly a medley. It sort of goes back and forth between them, so they're like mashed up together. And this was a mashup of very an unusual mashup. It was, the songs were Will I from Rent and Walk the Moon's 2014 pop hit, Shut Up and Dance. So the song from Rent is this like heart-rending cry from the height of the AIDS crisis from HIV-positive characters. Will I lose my dignity? Will someone care? Will I wake tomorrow from this nightmare? And Shut Up and Dance is just a pop song about turning off your worries and dancing. So that's a strange pairing. But before they performed the piece, the director got up and said that while the mashup may seem odd, it was done with some thought. And they wanted to communicate three things. One, that the youth knew the history of gay people and gay choruses and music like music from Rent. And while that they were not alive in the 90s, they wanted to honor those who died in the early days of AIDS and the history of gay choruses in singing at funeral after funeral and nurturing community through the height of that crisis. One. Two, that LGBTQ and queer youth face their own despair and challenges today, right? So it's not that everything is fine. Different challenges, but challenges nonetheless. And three, knowing all of that, the youth still commit to a vision of a life of joy and the power of music and laughter and celebration. And so having explained their message, the choruses launched into this big performance. And I wasn't the only one in tears as they started out with that song from Rent. And then I was not the only one standing up. And I was not the only one dancing in the aisles as it became this raucous sort of all-theater dance party. It was a celebration of how far we've come and acknowledgement of fear and defiant hope all at once. Hard times require furious dancing. It can be easy in a world of so many serious problems to imagine that art is a waste of energy, that it is a luxury, that we must choose between doing things that nurture ourselves and doing things that change the world. But you know, art changes people, and people change the world. Certainly, it's possible for art to become something sort of abstract and out of touch. I'm sure we have examples of that. And it can be hard in a world of scarcity to imagine that we have the funds for both a youth dance program, say, for example, and a program to ensure that those same youth get enough to eat. But hard times require listening to people who have survived hard times over and over. People like U.S. black women, heirs to a legacy both of enslavement and oppression and of resilience. People like Alice Walker, who did write "Hard Times Require Furious Dancing," and Audre Lorde, who wrote "Poetry is not a luxury." We need to dance. And in some ways, I do mean this literally. As you can hear in the stories, I told the story of what happened at the airport yesterday. Dance can be used in protest or organizing for justice, in interrupting hate speech, in making a protest more noticeable, in teaching the history of a cause or a community. And this is true, of course, more broadly of art and music, so not just dance. But I also mean that dance and art, more generally, nurtures justice in other and more indirect ways. So when I say we need to dance, I don't just mean dance, literally. I mean embodiment. I mean art. I mean community. I mean joy. At the end of all of our services, we sing that we are dancing for justice. And I don't know what John Schultz was thinking exactly when he wrote that in this song. But when I say that we can dance for justice, I mean all of those things: embodiment, art, community, joy. Hard times require embodiment. I mean the enslaved people that Alice Walker imagines contorting away the stress of, you know, hours and days and years and lifetimes bent over the plow or the hoe. I mean eating and drinking and sleeping and dancing and stretching. In this world, justice isn't some abstract theory. It's about what happens to people's bodies, whether or not a person has a right to and an expectation about keeping their body alive and well and under their own control. Oppression has to do with control of the body and with violence and with shame. And in that context, something that reclaims the body is liberating. Hard times require that we try to do that, and that we make space for that, for one another. Hard times require embodiment. Hard times require art. I'm sure you have your own examples of the time that a piece of art has profoundly moved you, gotten you through a hard time, or changed your mind about how you saw something in the world, something that was a social justice issue, and how that art brought it to life. Creating justice requires art because it requires imagination, furious imagination. To build a different world, we have to imagine it first, right? We can't go to a world that we aren't in yet if we haven't done some work imagining what it might be like. Audre Lorde wrote that poetry forms the quality of light within which we predicate our hopes and dreams towards survival and change. First made into language, then into idea, then into tangible action. Poetry is the way we help give name to the nameless so that it can be thought. It lays the foundation for a future of change, a bridge across our fears of what has never been. Having a different vision. In the Dance for Black Lives, the Dancing for Justice example that I talked about, the group deliberately had black and non-black participants do the same synchronized movements, which was a vision of empathy and solidarity that was very deliberate. And their dance was both a lament for black lives lost and an imagining of a world and a dancing out of that world where black people don't live in fear of violence in this way. So imagination and art create justice, not just for the audience or some change, but also for the artist. An artist has agency. and an artist from an oppressed or marginalized group gets to practice having agency and creativity and power by creating art. Hard times require art. They also require community. It's not enough to dance alone, metaphorically or literally. Although one person dancing alone is fun. I was at a conference last week and I took a little break, went back to my hotel room and did a little dance on top of the bed because I just needed to do it. That's important. You could do that. And one person dancing could probably interrupt hate speech or act out a vision of justice or connect with their own embodiment. But I chose to tell you stories that are all about people dancing together, because I think that's important in hard, what I'm calling hard times, times of oppression or times of personal struggle. Dance and art builds community, right? We know this. The people in the stories knew that. Ibrahim Dalati, the person who started that little dance party at the Eid celebration, said, "I believe music is a really great way to bring people together." We know that. Science even knows that now. One study showed that people who danced were able to tolerate pain more effectively. That's not all. The people who did synchronized movements together with others experienced less pain than those who didn't. Yeah, dancing together, and there's research about singing together that has to do with heart disease that's similar. It helps us feel connected, it helps us feel nurtured and closer and literally in less pain. So hard times require furious dancing together. And really the bottom line about all of this dancing stuff is that hard times require joy. Or honestly, what is the point? There's a famous quote from Emma Goldman, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be in your revolution." She's often quoted as saying that. This woman who was a feminist, an anarchist, controversial revolutionary from about a little more than 100 years ago, by the way, a survivor of religiously based oppression in another continent who came to the United States, thank you very much, said this: "At all these dances, I was one of the most untiring and gayest. One evening, a young boy took me aside with a grave face as if he were about to announce the death of a dear comrade. He whispered to me that it did not behoove an agitator to dance. Certainly not with such reckless abandon, anyway. It was undignified for one who was on the way to become a force in the anarchist movement. My frivolity would only hurt the cause. I grew furious at the impudent interference of the boy. I told him to mind his own business. I was tired of having the cause constantly thrown into my face. I did not believe that a cause which stood for a beautiful ideal, for anarchism, for release and freedom from conventions and prejudice, should demand the denial of life and joy. I insisted that our cause could not expect me to become a nun, and that the movement should not be turned into a cloister. If it meant that, I did not want it. I want freedom, the right to self-expression, everybody's right to beautiful, radiant things. We need to dance. Joy is a rebellion. It is a rebellion in the face of what is grinding us down. It is a way to get out for a moment from the fear and the grief and the hate, and we need that in order to keep going. Fear and grief and hate are real and valid, and I'm not saying we shouldn't experience them when we experience them, but we can't live there, not forever. And that crowd of dancing LGBT youth and all the rest of us at that chorus festival that night, not long after the Pulse shooting, we knew that. We were remembering and embodying the fact that LGBT rights are not just about something abstract, but about the right to be joyful and proud and fabulous and glittery and dancing and to live and to love. So rise up. The world needs us, and it needs our dancing. It needs our embodiment, our art, our community, and our joy. And we need those things in order to build a world of justice. Rise up. Let's sing and let's dance.